Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Inspire Your Life podcast with me, your host, Aarti Ravikrishnan. I believe we find inspiration all around us, especially from the stories that we all have in us. My aim with the Inspire Your Life podcast is to bring some of those real stories to light, stories of my guests that resonate with you and me. It's by listening to these stories that we can be inspired and motivate ourselves to overcome, find a new path, and rise even higher than we thought possible. Joining me on the show today is Yuri Ramkisoon, and we will be talking about how our passions can be the blueprint for our life's journey. Yuri is a senior researcher at the South African Human Rights Commission, heading up the Economic and Social Rights Unit. And believe me when I say she is a force to be reckoned with because she's passionate about what she does. Her activist work began when she was a teenager, growing up in the South Durban Industrial Basin, where communities live in tandem with major polluting industries, and the link between environmental rights and human rights is clearly apparent. Yuri has a Master of Science in Environmental Science and a postgraduate diploma in Sustainable Development and Human Rights. In her work, she monitors a range of rights such as healthcare, basic education, water and sanitation, and the cross-cutting impacts on gender, race, and groups categorized as vulnerable in South Africa. Yuri has done much work in the field of economic and social rights, but has a particular interest in the impact of private sector activities on the environment and other human rights. In addition to undertaking research on realizing socioeconomic rights in South Africa, Yuri has presented her research findings to the state, parliament, and a myriad of international organizations, including the United Nations. Yuri, you are a powerhouse, even though you don't always believe it, and I'm so privileged to call you my close friend. I'm beyond thrilled to have you on the Inspire Your Life podcast today. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Aarti. I have to say you are one of my biggest fans, even as you say, if I don't always know it. So I really appreciate it. It's great to be here.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful. It's a cold, rainy day in Johannesburg, so I'm sure you're keeping warm. And yeah, it'll be so lovely for us to actually get to know a little bit more about you, because I've just given a little bit about your career and a little bit about where you've grown up. But we want to know more about your background, your hobbies, things you like and dislike. So share with us, Yuri.
Cool. So I think at the outset, it's important to note that I am a child of a family of activists, which is very much a defining factor in my life. I'm originally, as you said, from the South Durban Industrial Basin near Bank, but I've been in Johannesburg, well, next month will be 16 years with my husband, Yash. I have twin boys, age 7, and 2 Labradors. I come from a very liberal, left-leaning, fun, easygoing family. My childhood consisted of large family gatherings, lots of food, lots of tea, many diverse opinions, and lots of love. And fortunately, my family and friends have continued this tradition even in Joburg. My loves are books, tea, samosas, spectator sport, and anything Lord of the Rings. I love swimming. I used to swim for the district and went to provincial level in KwaZulu-Natal. Unfortunately, I don't do too much of that anymore. I really dislike anything that takes me away from my books, particularly mindless things like washing my car, which I don't think I've done in my life. I hate it when drivers don't keep left and pass right. And of course, I hate bigots. Yeah.
as one would expect, Yuri. Oh, well, that's brilliant. Thank you so much. You give us such a beautiful insight about your context and family life as well. So really, really appreciate that. And it gives us a really good sense about where your passion actually emanated from. But, you know, maybe in your words, tell us about that. You know, how and when did you discover your passion for human and environmental rights and other things too?
Okay. So I think I discovered my passion long before I actually acknowledged it or recognized it.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in the South Durban Industrial Basin. And for those who don't know it, it's an area of large and small industries with residential areas interspersed.
Mm-hmm.
And research has shown that the proportion of people suffering with respiratory related illnesses and cancer is much higher than average in these areas.
Yes.
I battled years with severe asthma. And there's also evidence that my childhood illnesses may have been a factor in the chronic illnesses I suffer with now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. As a child and teenager in Mirbank, I witnessed firsthand the impunity with which the private sector operates. The lack of willingness by the state to concretely address environmental issues in the area. And they were very much race related, because I think if we were a white community, it would have been addressed, you know, differently.
Yes.
And I think I importantly saw the link between environmental violations and other human rights, you know, such as the disproportionate impact on poor people. Even though it was a poor area, there were still, you know, levels of poverty and on women. You know, so initially I wanted to be a microbiologist. I actually registered for that degree at the University of Natal, which is now University of UKZN. But I found it mind-numbingly boring. And just by chance, I chose environmental sciences, almost a filler. It was the fourth first-year course that I needed for the BSc degree.
Yes.
And as fate would have it, it spoke to my very being. It took some time, so I managed to change my major.
Yeah.
And was that? It was quite, I think I was quite the troublemaker, even to my liberal environmental science department, because in postgraduate, I was constantly awarded with prizes of dissent.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I think importantly, it was in 2008 when I joined the South African Human Rights Commission. Sort of my life's passion or purpose came full circle because I started to see in theory and in practice the link between environment, business, and other human rights, and the way in which the state and non-state actors could be held accountable for the violation. So it really came full circle.
Yuri, I mean, you've painted such a, you know, a picture for us in terms of, you know, growing up in that. I mean, it was obviously a beautiful time for you because family and all of that, but being so cognizant of what was going on around you in terms of the pollution, the impact on families and communities in that area, something obviously resonated with you as part of that, even when you went to university. And you know, thankfully you did the fuller course. And then actually what actually triggered you into doing what you love to do now. And, you know, I know for a lot of people, sometimes our background doesn't give us that those sort of clues, perhaps. And sometimes it's very difficult to find that passion that you know, everyone talks about. You need to be passionate about what you do. Maybe just from your perspective, you know, how can one tell that what it is that they're doing, whether it is worthwhile spending time and energy on? Is it part of the process towards finding purpose, like you said, you know, coming full circle, joining the Human Rights Commission? Does one find out right at the beginning? What's your take on it?
Yeah, you know, I have to say at the outset that following one's passion is often reserved for the privileged.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to recognize or acknowledge and act on one's passion when you're concentrating on survival or making ends meet.
Yes.
And I think that's I'm partially an advocate for human rights, particularly a basic income grant. But, you know, that's an argument for another day.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree that it's very difficult to find one's passion and flow if you're focusing on things, you know, or whether you should be focusing on certain things. And I got very lucky.
Yeah.
But in my time as a mentor and my experiences with work, friends and family, I find that often people have some idea of what makes them happy. And they may not recognize it as a passion because it's not their life's work, for example.
Right.
And there are a few ways I think of, you know, identifying what makes you happy. So firstly, what makes you unhappy? What is the source of this unhappiness?
Right.
My dad said to me when I was very young, even before I went to university, that if you're getting up every single morning unhappy and dreading to go to work, not because you want to sleep in or because it's cold, mm-hmm. but honestly dreading going to work, you are in the wrong field and you need to take that out, you know? And that resonates with me even today. What do you read? What do you watch on television? What do you spend your free time on? Those can give you clues as to, you know, what you really want to do with life. Mm. What makes you happy and what makes you sad or worried? You know, what gives you sleepless nights? That can be a clue. So for me, I do find that I worry, you know, a lot about the world and politics, and I have to disengage. I have to learn to disengage. Mm-hmm. But that's obviously a clue about my character, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And then importantly, have conversations with people around you, because you'll find that people in your life, friends, family, colleagues, are quite perceptive about the way in which they see you.
Yes.
And that too can give you clues about, you know, where your passion or where your flow lies.
I really, really love that. I mean, those are some really, really beautiful tips, particularly the converse to happiness, you know, because that is very, very telling. So excellent advice from Dad there. And I must say, I myself also follow that, probably more recently. But, you know, listening to that gut instinct about what doesn't make one happy really is quite telling. And I love the rest of it in terms of things that one enjoys doing, perceptions from our friends and family as well, because that does give us very, very good insight. So lovely, lovely tips there. Now, I remember when we were talking, you were also talking about, or you mentioned to me rather, that, you know, following one's passion can become the blueprint of one's life. Can you elaborate a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. I often notice that when people have a passion for a particular interest in something, they tend to do it really well, mm-hmm. which leads to positives, not just for them, but for their families, their communities, and even society at large. Mm-hmm. So when I say really well, I don't mean that they have to be, they have to have all the answers,
yes.
or that they have to best at it. It just means you pour your energy and love into it. Mm-hmm. And then those actually lead to an outcome that's generally quite thorough and quite beautiful. Mm. It comes in so many forms, you know. I notice like a person crocheting dolls to sell to people at work, you know, people who have kids, mm-hmm. they find joy in that. Or a teacher using their creative skills to make like personalized party favors on the side, you know,
yes.
it just brings them so much of joy, you know, creating things.
Mm.
Another example is sometimes at work, I will ask a researcher to develop a proposal for research mm-hmm. related, you know, our field of work, but something that they are passionate about or are partial to.
Right.
If their proposal is good and it, you know, I let them run with the research, given that it's within the bounds of our mandate.
Mm-hmm.
The results are surprising and very, for lack of a better word, satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They may lead towards, for example, the rights of a woman, you know, as my current researcher has shown to have a passion for,
right.
or the plight of the homeless, for example. They put that much extra into their work, and the right. outcomes are actually just amazing. And you see them flourish in a way that they didn't really, you know, prior to that.
Right.
And it gives you and it gives them clues in what direction they should probably focus, you know.
Lovely.
Now, just a few caveats to my statement. A passion doesn't have to be static. It changes over time.
Mm-hmm.
And often people don't just have one passion. They have a few, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to note that there's often no dream job waiting in the wings, you know, that allows you to follow your passion entirely
right.
without obstacles. I think one has to find ways to build in the things that you enjoy doing, accepting that sometimes much of your day in your job or daily life, it, you know, you'll be involved in doing things that you don't really like, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then it's important. Sorry.
No. Yeah. I was just going to say on that point, I really love what you're talking about in terms of not everything is going to be exactly as, you know, one would expect, because you may need to intersperse things that you love during the day. So I really like that point that you made.
It's also important to note that your passion doesn't have to be philanthropic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People say, oh, following my passion to help someone or, you know, do this or do that.
Yes.
If it's not something you feel, then it's patronizing, you know? It yes. could be something like, I've got cousins who buy and repurpose old cars. Mm-hmm. They love it on the weekend. Mm-hmm. It brings them joy. Mm-hmm. Could be gardening, you know, but it could also be your full-time job. It just ultimately means, you know, identifying your strengths and interests and using them productively, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a very happy thing to behold. I just want to add that I recently lost a very close friend. She was a medical doctor by profession, mm-hmm. but she loved doing crafts. Like mm-hmm. she did the most beautiful needlework and embroidery. She took so much joy in creating special gifts for people. So last year for my birthday, she gave me a notebook with beadwork that she did by hand and some personalized stationery. And I love stationery. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, it's a gift that I will just treasure, you know, for eternity.
Absolutely, absolutely, Yuri. And sorry to hear about the loss of your friend as well. But yeah, I mean, that passion, that blueprint that you're talking about, I like that you mentioned that this is not something that's necessarily static, because we're growing as individuals. We're becoming more mature in the way we look at the world and see the world. And those passions of ours evolve too, as we get to know more. So really, really important to note. The other thing that you mentioned was sometimes that there's obstacles in our way. What have been some of the obstacles or difficulties you faced in pursuing your passion?
So I think I've battled with some generic obstacles that many of us face, and then some personal. Mm-hmm. I've battled with very poor management. And you often hear the saying that people don't leave bad jobs, they leave bad managers,
exactly, yeah.
And managers that lack any sort of discretion or, you know, emotional intelligence are very difficult to work with. Mm-hmm. And and then obviously I've also questioned my commitment to my ideals, or I constantly do it,
yeah,
with changing political environments in the country and globally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think self-reflection is often needed. And sometimes we're so busy with our lives, we don't self-reflect.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's an important part of growing.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Personally, I've battled with the chronic illnesses, mm-hmm. including a debilitating autoimmune illness. And mm-hmm. I've had a long battle with infertility. And it was very difficult mentally and physically to go through fertility treatments. But mm-hmm. I've now been with two beautiful boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to say that my struggles have made me stronger or have learned a lot. But I don't know, at the risk of sounding like an absolute cliche, I think that what I have learned is that you really never know what battles a person is fighting. You really don't.
Yes.
You don't know why they've reacted badly in traffic or why they shouted at you at work in the morning. And I'm not excusing bad behavior,
mm-hmm.
but just try and be kind and maybe try and be understanding, because there's often a deeper story that we know nothing about, you know?
Right. No, that's so true, Yuri. That's so true. And I mean, you've spoken about self-reflection, you've spoken about kindness, and these are things I would think are some ways in which you've managed to tackle some of these difficulties in your way. What other things could one do to face these obstacles as they arise?
You know, when I was reflecting, I just thought, gosh, this is a really difficult one. I'm not a religious person. I think uh-huh. I'm more spiritual. I don't have religion per se to lean on.
Yes.
But I think surrounding myself with people who enjoy my company helped a lot.
Uh-huh.
Perspective on what I did have as opposed to what I didn't did help occasionally. It wasn't okay. always helpful, but uh-huh. it did.
Okay.
But I think the best advice I can give you is to surround yourself with people that, you know, love you and that you love.
Uh-huh.
And surround, you know, yourself with things that you love, like books and tea. And yeah. importantly, be very kind to yourself, you know. I think that one tip, a very practical tip I can give to people when dealing with work-related issues,
mm-hmm.
You know, professionally. For example, if you're dealing with insubordination or incompetency, even at a higher level,
mm-hmm.
follow protocols.
Okay.
Don't skip. Follow manuals that companies have put in place. Mm-hmm. They're there for a skipping steps will just not work in your favor.
I like that. You know, sticking to the protocols, going through the proper channels to get things done. And then obviously on the personal side as well, just doing some of those hobbies that you really enjoy, like yours, tea, books, and of course, Lord of the Rings. Let's not forget that.
Lord of the Rings.
Immerse yourself in the Middle Earth. There's nothing better than that. I'm a huge fan too. All right. Well, I mean, Yuri, some really, really great tips there. And, you know, I guess so much has happened. I mean, you've mentioned some personal things that have been part of your journey as well. What have been some of the biggest highlights? And you've mentioned some of them, but maybe some of the others in your journey so far, and how do they tie in to what you love doing?
So I've been to the United Nations two or three times. I can't remember.
Brilliant.
Now representing the Commission on Issues Related to Water and Sanitation. In 2008, I was named one of the Mail and Guardian's 30 under 30 to take to lunch.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I've been presenting reports to Parliament on legislation and lack of compliance with legislation on a few occasions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are some of my career highlights. But yeah. I think the most important, highlight for me is producing research that made difference in a person's life or community some way. You know, this links to my passion for research, but particularly research that leads to concrete outcomes to improve the lives of the most disenfranchised in the country. For me, those will always be my most important achievements. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, my family.
Of course. I mean, that impact, as you're talking about, you know, it's going just beyond the written research, but it's making fundamental changes and differences to somebody, even just one person. Lovely, lovely. Looking back, is there anything that you would have done differently or perhaps even regret?
You know, I often do have regret, and I wish that I had done something differently, either personally or work-related, that maybe I should have done a law degree instead of a science degree. Uh-huh. But then I realized that all I have done has led me to the point I am at today. And I can't ever risk changing something in my past that will then, you know, compromise my current reality.
Of course. So yeah, I mean, we feel fulfilled in the journey that we're on, even though, you know, in hindsight, perhaps we could have done things a little bit differently. But I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that, you know, you've come to that point of feeling that this is where I'm meant to be with everything that has happened, you know.
And and I mean, I look at my kids in particular and I just think, gosh, they were worth the wait.
Oh, man. Beautiful. And I can vouch, listeners, they are the most beautiful boys. I'm very biased, but I absolutely love them.
Absolutely.
Yuri, beautiful, you know, and so authentic and very real in terms of, you know, what you've been sharing with us in terms of obstacles, in terms of tips. What would you say are some of the key lessons you've learned along the way that really you keep drawing on as you're taking each step forward every day?
So I think there's some practical, you know, lessons that I've learned, and then some more philosophical. So practically, I think don't take constructive, and the key word here is constructive, criticism badly. Mm-hmm. It's something you can learn from, you know. Mm-hmm. Keep learning. Learn anything. Just don't stop learning. I think, you know, from a practical point of view, take accountability when it's your accountability to take. Mm-hmm. At some point, buck has to stop somewhere. And if it has to stop with you, it must. Mm-hmm. Because I think in our country, there's a lot of passing of the buck, you know?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think until we start making changes within ourselves and our companies, the impunity sort of, you know, culture will continue. Mm-hmm. From a more philosophical point of view, my best friend Natasha taught me to do things imperfectly. Mm-hmm. Meaning that your best is good enough, particularly on difficult days. Right. You just need to do your best. You don't have to move mountains every single day. Mm-hmm. I think I also learned after having kids to try and live in the moment. And people say it all the time, but what does it mean? Mm-hmm. And for me, it literally means leaving my cell phone or iPad or laptop in the bedroom and going and spending time with them, where I can't pick up the cell phone when it pings to look at it and then miss what they're doing or what they're saying to me.
Right. Oh, that
it's really made a difference. Yeah, in immersing myself in them, you know. Mm-hmm. And even if you do that for a shorter time, as opposed to a longer time with them, but your mind is on your phone and them. know, it makes a big difference. And then never underestimate the impact that an individual can have on the world, negative or positive. I think that's a very important, you know, lesson for me. In relation to, you know, being immersed in the moment, I think it's become even more poignant with, you know, the death of my friend Elvira. Mm-hmm. And you realize that life really is indeed short.
Indeed. I mean, the pandemic has claimed so many lives. We're going through a war, you know, as well, so many different wars at different levels being publicized at different stages. That idea around presence and gratitude, I think, is just so key in the current context, Yuri. So thank you for that reminder. Absolutely. Where is your passion leading you to next? Or where at least will you hope that it will lead you? What are you hoping to achieve, Yuri?
So I want to do a PhD in environmental science and human rights. Mm-hmm. I'm currently working on a proposal, and I hope that my health and my kids behave enough to allow me to get it done.
My goodness.
But I really think, yeah, and it's not something I want to do, you know, I've always wanted to do a PhD, but it's not just, you know, for the title or to say you're expert in something. But yes, I really think that I want to advance the discourse on protecting environmental rights and the link to human rights. Right. Because often environmental rights is seen as an elitist right.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Talking, you know, it's, you know, a stereotype. But, you know, the people who deal with environment on a daily basis are those that are most connected to the earth. Mm-hmm. And I want to make those links more apparent for people. Yeah. So I want to advance the discourse on environmental rights. Yeah.
I think that's absolutely beautiful. And I can't wait. I can't wait for you to get stuck into it. And I'm sure everything will behave for you to be able to get this. So yeah, that sounds like another passion project in the way in terms of your journey of just building out that impact that you love making with people. So that's really beautiful. Yuri, we're coming almost to the end of this beautiful conversation. I've taken away, and I've been scribbling notes, taking away a lot of notes because they're so useful, so practical, based on your journey, based on your experiences, mentoring others too, and what you've seen. Is there a key piece of advice that maybe you want to leave us with? You know, especially for many of us who haven't quite found out what our true north is. We still haven't figured it out. What could you say to help us, guide us?
Two things. Pay attention to the things that bring you unhappiness, because it's these negatives that give you clues to what makes you happy. Mm-hmm. And then I think keep doing things that give you joy, because there's no formula for finding your true north. Mm. It may come, you know, as a surprise, or it may be a process. So paying attention to make things that make you unhappy, but also things that make you happy, I think that, you know, in the long run, may be of assistance.
I agree. I like that. And thanks for rounding and reminding us of that. It's both the unhappiness and what gives us absolute joy. And that, I think, you know, that should be a great starting point for us to actually, you know, whether you write it down, whether you talk it out aloud, whether you, you know, like you said, you know, you're journaling it, but actually just reflecting on that and regularly might be very, very useful. So thanks, Yuri, for that. I'd love, in closing, if you could share with us something that really inspires you, whether it's a poem, quote, a song lyric, anything that just keeps your passion alive.
You know, so relating to this theme of passion, I often think of the lyrics of the song "What a Feeling" by Aria Cara. You know, it comes to mind about taking your passion and making it happen. But instead, I think I want to share a quote that the late Dr. Elvira Singh shared with me a few months before she passed. Mm-hmm. And that is, you can't wait for until life isn't hard anymore to be happy.
That is so poignant. Absolutely. We can't. We absolutely can't. And ties into what you mentioned about enjoying the moment and being present. On that beautiful, beautiful note, Yuri, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been such a pleasure talking to you, and I hope you have a great day further.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Take care. Bye. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode today. If you like what you heard, rate the episode and podcast, and feel free to write a review
Plus, of course, share with others too. I love talking around topics like these. So if you like my perspective or insight on a subject close to your heart, or something that you're grappling with, reach out to me in your comments or send me an email via my website or connect with me via LinkedIn, Instagram or Facebook. All my social media are on the podcast information. If it's important to you, then it's important to me. So happy listening to the Inspire Your Life podcast, and catch you soon on the next episode. Bye.